I was thinking tonight how fortunate WCCO has been, and not only how fortunate, but how great it has been. And there's only one time in the entire 50 years history of this great radio station that it ever had a threat that might have somehow or another taken it from position number one in the Northwest. And that's when I was a news broadcaster on WPCN on the same hour as Cedric Adams, you know? Well, I want to tell you, you can see why I haven't been as fortunate as I should have been according to my own designs and politics. Imagine Hubert Humphrey trying to compete with Cedric Adams. I'll tell you, that's really great. But I needed the money. Yeah. Saul, Teshoff, we want to thank you very much. You're so respected in this industry. I've had the privilege of knowing you for some years, and I consider it a very rare honor and privilege, and it's good to have you here. Larry Hague was so proud to get that citation and that marvelous golden mic over there. That really looks good. And if it's solid gold, it's even better. But it's a great tribute. It's truly a great radio station. This is the 15th annual dinner, I understand. When I heard it was a fundraiser, somebody told me, I said, I'm coming. I got some unpaid campaign debts, and I thought, you know, I work on percentage. I thought they might cut me in, and not only that, instead it's for folks that sort of had trouble. And it seemed to me that I qualified. I might get on the program somewhere along there. But the very first radio station I ever visited was WCCO. My father took me to Minneapolis when I was a boy, I think about the eighth or ninth grade. And you just moved over to the Nicholas Hotel. And I'd never seen a hotel that had over two stories. And I went to the Nicholas Hotel. That's the biggest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I had never seen a streetcar, never had seen a radio station. And I got up there to see WCCO. I just sat here and I was thinking about it tonight, the first time. And not long ago, I was up to that same hotel for WCCO-FM. And it was just like an old homecoming, coming back to that wonderful station. And here it was a gold medal station. Well, if you're out our way, you know, gold medal flower. And, of course, it was Washburn Crosby, and here's Abbott Washburn. And first it started in the Oak Grove Hotel, and may I say that I started some of my politics. I had a campaign headquarters in the Oak Grove Hotel. I haven't done as well as WCCO, but I at least started from the same point. We had an equal start in life. And now it's over on the 7th and 2nd Avenue in the WCCO building, and I'll tell you, we like it. WCCO is to the Northwest and to Minnesota what lutefisk is to Norway, I want you to know. Or what vodka is to Russia and wine is to France and an elephant is to a Republican and a donkey is to a Democrat. It is it. And I call up as often as I can to get on the news. I got there what we call the beeper. I call up there the newsroom. It's 336-1202. And I say, would you like to get the news? And we've convinced the Senate to put watch lines right off in the Senate lobby there, in the Senate cloakroom. And I'll tell you that just as soon as there's a critical vote on something, I get right in there and get a hold of Larry Hague, Jr. over at WCCO newsroom or one of the other boys and say, this is your old friend, Hubert Humphrey. After all, we're folksy out our way, you know? The good neighbor station, you know, old friend Hubert. And they just take it right down on the tape. I hear they play it back once in a while, too. Well, I guess you know that I do feel happy to be here tonight. I wouldn't have missed this occasion. It's one of the evenings that Mrs. Humphrey and I have wanted to have in New York with you because we like you. Just that simple. You know, you don't need to get really all erudite and have a sort of a special feeling about this. We're just happy here. We just like you. And I look out over this audience and see many old friends, and some of you come up to say hello. And I heard names tonight that were mentioned here that brought back some very happy memories. I've always felt that there's a certain kinship, though, you know, between politicians and radio broadcasters. Now, you might not like that. People don't like these invidious comparisons, but I got you for a moment. There, you know, if you just think about it, there is some relationship. Now, we politicians sit down somewhere and talk as fast as we can and hope that somebody's listening. But we never know until the ratings come out. And I think that applies sometimes to broadcasting. If we're good, we gain some sponsors. If we aren't, someone else is scheduled in our time slot. The people have spoken, and frankly, that's what it is in broadcasting. Your program just don't satisfy, you're out of business, or at least you've got to change the program. Of course, there are some modest differences between our two professions. No legislator can provide so much information in so many ways as radio can, even though some of us try, I want you to know. No politician can provide so much entertainment, and no one public office can provide so much constant companionship to thousands in their daily lives. But we never know until the ratings come out. And I think that applies sometimes to broadcasting. If we're good, we gain some sponsors. If we aren't, someone else is scheduled in our time slot. The people have spoken, and frankly, that's what it is in broadcasting. If your programs just don't satisfy, you're out of business, or at least you've got to change the program. Of course, there are some modest differences between our two professions. No legislator can provide so much information in so many ways as radio can, even though some of us try, I want you to know. No politician can provide so much entertainment, and no one public office can provide so much constant companionship to thousands in their daily lives. And really, that's what radio is. Radio has a unique role to play. It's one thing to have that television station on or that television set, but you got to watch it. But radio teaches you to listen. And the people that are on radio that bring their message have to do a much better job of using the spoken and the written word than someone that can use just the word and the picture. This is not in any way to diminish what I consider to be the powerful impact of the electronic media of television. Because as Confucius said once, one picture is worth 10,000 words. I told the White House photographers once that if they'd taken more pictures of me and published them, I wouldn't have spoken so long. But they just didn't do it. A few stations can do as many wonderful things and as fully and as well as WCCO has done in the last 50 years. I believe we ought to correct that in a way, Larry. It's really almost 52 years. It started out with WLAG, didn't it? 54 years. But anyway, we'll settle for 50. It sounds real good. Leaving aside now the obvious contributions of the medium of radio, like the hourly up-to-the-date news, weather warnings, and that means so much to us. And by the way, I bet you've got more listeners the last few years than you ever had before because of the obvious change in weather that has taken place. And I got bad news and good news for you. It's going to continue, according to all the climatologists. Tornadoes, weather disasters. We don't know why, but we're in that cycle. And there's public information of every conceivable kind. There's rich entertainment, music, and drama. I remember the first pipe organ I ever heard was over WCCO. Eddie Dunstetter, isn't that right? I tell you, my father used to love WCCO. I grew up in a family where my father used to say, stay out of bed, people die there. So I never got much sleep. I've been educated and trained not to get much sleep. That's a fact. My dad always stayed up for the midnight news. And we always got the news from WCCO, and then we used to get it from KFI out in Los Angeles. They were putting it on at 10 o'clock out there, and it was 12 o'clock where we were out in South Dakota. And I can still see Dad driving the car out there, and that's where we listened to it, in the car radio. Radio is a very important part of our lives, not only because I'm a public man, but it was very important in our private life. There was the Sunday sermons that we used to listen to. Harry Emerson Fosdick, I remember. I remember so much about radio. And it really brought something to my life. I think I learned more out of radio than almost any educational media that I can think of. Because we were listeners, and we enjoyed it immensely. So radio is unique in many capacities. And it surely is unique in enriching the lives of our citizens. And that does place a responsibility upon you. A responsibility for quality, whatever you do. Perhaps no other institution of modern life can lend so much to the quality of the average day. Now, there's no way to calculate what radio means to the solitary traveler, is there? To the housewife at home. To the lonely shut-ins. To the farmers who get up early in the morning and want to listen to the market news and the weather news and other things as they're out there doing their farm chores. To the elderly, who are so lonely often. And to that young student that carries that little transistor radio around with him. And to so many people. every day in countless ways. Radio acts as what we call in good in CCO land, the good neighbor. And we call it CCO land our way. If you really, if somebody comes up to you and says, you know, I know about your part of the country. I said, what do you know about it? Well, they start telling me about the size of Minnesota. I said, you haven't even come close. If you don't call it CCO land, we don't include you in. We're suspicious of you up to them. You're really not cut in on us. Radio is, as we call it, the good neighbor, WCCO, the good neighbor. And it is a friend in need, and it is a warm companion. Now, Marshall McLuhan says that radio is the hot medium. Maybe he was thinking of WCCO when he wrote that. I remember one time when they certainly made it hot for me. It was in the summer of 1964. I was at the Democratic National Convention in Atlantic City. I was wondering what was going to happen to me and hoping. And I was on the phone to WCCO's party line program describing my impressions of the convention. Suddenly, the program was interrupted by a CBS News bulletin. I see that there's a picture in there in this program tonight about that. And the CBS bulletin made the announcement that President Johnson was going to ask Hubert Humphrey to be the vice presidential candidate. Well, I'd say that was good from two points. First of all, the president had very good judgment. And secondly, may I say, it was wonderful news to hear because I was wondering what he was going to do. I couldn't find it out from him. I had a whole battery of people trying to find out, and here, where do you think I got it? Right from WCCO. Now, that's instant news, and that's live, real drama. You don't think so? You ought to see what happened to me. I almost collapsed. It was great. I don't necessarily credit WCCO with getting me into the office, but I really doubt that many vice presidents of the United States can say to themselves and to their neighbors, you heard it first on WCCO. I call that action news. So I have a special feeling about it. Now, I got just another word or two here. CCO has a policy of full-size variety programming. And I'm sure that they have never encountered more full-size variety than the time they carried the first taped radio broadcast from the Kremlin. No other station has ever done it. No other time has it ever happened. Jim Borman, our good friend from WCCO, was covering the story. He was with me on a visit to the Soviet Union. By the way, I asked the whole media in Minnesota to join me. I said, we're going to do something over there. Come along. There's just a couple of the St. Paul Pioneer Press and Dispatch. I had the good sense to send somebody. I tried to get the Tribune. I guess they were a little hard up over there in Minneapolis. They didn't want to come along. Otto. and then there was WCCO. Well, Jim Borman was there covering the story, and like the good reporter that he is, he had his tape recorder with him. Now, the Soviets frowned on this tape recorder business. In fact, I think they would rather have had a live skunk in the meeting with them than a tape recorder. There are really, after all, no sunshine laws in the Soviet Union. You don't have open meetings, and all that stuff. But they must have recognized a persuasive negotiator when they saw one, because they finally yielded to my insistence. Now, the way it really worked was that Jim just came in, and he had that tape recorder there, and he just kind of set it up on the table, and I could just see him looking around. And we kept on talking, and I kept on asking questions, getting the Minister of Foreign Trade to talk to us and talk to us, and he kept on looking. Finally, I said, oh, Mr. Minister, if this is at all embarrassing to you, which I'm sure it is not, I said we could. I could ask my friend Mr. Borman to take the recorder out of the room, but he's here. He's come a long ways. I'm sure that you wouldn't mind the people back a little. And give him one of those Senate filibusters. And he didn't say no. And Jim just kept it going. Well, in line with Lee Levenger's remarks tonight, I made the Soviets an offer that they couldn't refuse, and the offer was we wanted to stay and let Jim Borman tape. And Jim brought his tape recorder right into that Kremlin meeting. And as far as I know, this is the first time that any inside material from the Kremlin was ever broadcast. In fact, I was told there that never before had it happened. And it took a little guts, a little courage, and a little good luck. And I tell you, all three are very worthwhile. I don't think that sat well with our hosts. I have the nagging doubt about this because I went out to Khrushchev's tomb later on, and I think about half the audience there was the secret police. I looked around, and every place I could look, there they were. I can still see that old yellow car looking like a Plymouth, about the 1950 variety. The secret police, of course, are very good listeners. You have to say that for him, and we've got a few around here from what I've been reading lately. And they're extremely attentive, but they are not perhaps the best audience a visitor or speaker could have. Ironically, though, the biggest radio highlight of that trip happened strictly by accident. I had an appointment with Premier Kosygin, and I spent a couple of hours with him. And I was supposed to get to Jim afterward for an interview. And because the end of the appointment lasted a long time and our conversation went on for considerable time, Jim couldn't hold up. It was a live broadcast that he was going to have for back to Minnesota. And I got there a little too late. In fact, he was right in the middle of a live broadcast to Minnesota. And since I was there and came in as he was broadcasting over the telephone, I went directly on the air through that Soviet telephone without even checking first with the embassy. They don't like to have senators do that. They like to sort of cleanse you, you know, and kind of clean it all up and look and say, now, what are you going to say? Well, the State Department was not exactly delighted with this course of events, but at least it was a scoop for WCCO. There we were again. So as you can see, we brought free speech right into the Soviet Union, Lee, and it was really wonderful. So as you can see, WCCO has been a very good neighbor to me. And I hope that as a senator that I can be a good neighbor to broadcasting. Understanding of your problems and recognizing that you have a great public duty and public service to perform. Now, I don't want you to be misunderstood. I don't want to be misunderstood. I like you better when you say nice things about me. And I like you a whole lot less if you make the tragic mistake and poor judgment of not saying nice things about me. I just thought we ought to get that clear. And I don't want to in any way try to put any pressure on anybody, but Warren Berger is a very good friend of mine. And all that sort of thing. But we don't have to say things like that except in jest. For a long time, we've both seen broadcasting, and for many years now, we know that it's been performing a great service. I look forward to a successful partnership for many years to come. And I want to extend my warmest congratulations, Larry, to you, to WCCO, on being honored by the broadcast pioneers for its distinguished service. And I'm very sorry that tonight Phil Lewis isn't with us, but I understand that his dear wife is not well. But believe me, he would have enjoyed this evening, as my friend Gordy over here enjoys it and others around here. This is a great party. And whenever you folks get discouraged with this part of the world, may I say that we will welcome you into the North Star State, so that you can listen to broadcasting at its best from WCCO, the good neighbor to the Northwest. Thank you.